in association with Newsarama. Welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today, we talk with Rick Remender. Rick's back talking about a lot of his creator-owned books, things like Fear Agent, his wonderful sci-fi series with Tony Moore, a couple other creator-owned projects coming up in October, Legion of the Supernatural from IDW, and Gigantic from Dark Horse. Plus, we'll discuss his work for Marvel Comics, like Punisher War Journal, co-written with Matt Fraction. And we'll
start things off with
a discussion about some of his DC
news,
work.
But has since been corrected, and that is you're on Booster Gold currently, but or will be in a couple months, but not as the permanent writer.
No, really excited about the two-issue arc we're doing, but no, they've announced that Dan Jurgens will rightfully be taking it over, which is great. You know, it's nice to see somebody, and I know he's been heavily involved in what's going on with Johns and Katz's run on relaunching the book. And you know, it's his character. Sure, it's a DC property, but you know, Dan created the character, and it's nice to see that they're giving him giving him the reins.
But this is cool because in some ways, the story that you're going to be doing, which features Starro, is kind of a continuation of themes that you had brewing in the Atom?
Just a little bit. I became enamored with Kronos. I find the character is completely underused. And here you've got somebody who he's got one of these classic, ridiculous Silver Age costumes, which I just love. I mean, it makes him look fucking insane. You know what? It makes him look insane. Let's not work blue, John. I know that you prefer the profanity. I know you like the profanity.
Anyone can swear if they want to, but it's, you know, I won't deny that, you know, this is the dark side of my radio career. During the day, I have to abide by the FCC. But anything goes. If you want to work clean, you can work clean, Rick. It's all right.
I don't want to work clean. I hate clean. I like to curse. I'm very juvenile.
Well, you can do whatever you want, bud. But it's fine. No, I agree with you, though. Kronos always had a cool costume. And it seems like it took the 21st century to kind of show a purpose beyond that cool costume.
Well, you know, the great thing about, like, you know, Kang is a big villain, you know.
Uh-huh.
He's a time traveler.
Sure.
And to get my Glavin glasses on and to go into nerd hysterics.
By all means.
I mean, when you got a guy who's out for mischief and he can travel in time, you're in trouble. But anyway, so I fell in love with Kronos, and Pat and I created Lady Kronos, who sort of spun out of a character from Gale's storyline.
Very cool.
Gia, who was sort of a former crush that Ryan had, who turned out to be in cahoots with Kronos the whole time, and had, in fact, planted the belt for Ryan to find in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So having written these guys and not being able to completely finish what we had started, it came up in conversation with editor Mike Siglane, and we found a perfect place for it, and it really fit. And so,
absolutely.
Obviously, you don't want to go wedging things in where they don't belong, and this was like a natural fit. We were talking about some of the stuff that's coming up with Booster. We were talking about the tone and the sort of situation the character's in right now, and who's a better villain to sort of be under, you know, to sort of, you know, in the background undermining what Booster's doing than Kronos and Lady Kronos.
Absolutely. No, I like this whole rogues gallery of time travelers that Booster has to now face, and it does up the odds because I can't even think of any, and I enjoyed reading, you know, the Jurgens run back in the 80s too, but I really can't remember a good, you know, rogues gallery for Booster Gold, and
no,
I think,
of course not. I mean,
you know, this new direction helps provide him with one.
I think that what they did when they relaunched this thing was mm-hmm. to give it a clean, accessible, high concept. You know, Booster Gold has to basically fix the damage done by the crises, but he's never going to be sort of given the accolades and the praise and acknowledged for what he's done here. He's always going to be the buffoon. And it's selfless, and it makes him a hero. And at the same time, it's endless how many great scenarios you can throw him in.
And beyond the Kronoses, we've got Starro.
Oh, love Starro. How do you not love Starro?
Yeah, another goofy image, but really, I think, handled the right way. A scary villain.
That's what I love about, I mean, like, my thing is the aesthetic. I love, like, the pulp, the classic B-movie schlock, Silver Age aesthetic, you know, or Golden Age, or you know, Fear Agent is definitely representational of my love for that stuff. And so a character like Starro, I mean, okay, a face hugger in Aliens, it looks creepy. You know, it's scurrying across the floor, it looks creepy. It hugs onto your face and it impregnates you. Starro doesn't necessarily look creepy, but when you realize what has to happen for one of those Starro spores to take you over, it snatches onto your face and it grows tendrils into your eyes that connect to your brain, and it's pretty hairy. It's classic horror movie sci-fi stuff. So when I was talking to Mike about what I would want to do on some booster, Starro was like immediately on the list. And then, you know, you put him in a situation where he gets he controls Rip Hunter, he controls a Time Master, he can start spreading those spores in throughout history where no one can stop him. It led to a lot of really interesting, you know, scenarios.
We might be hearing more as far as a regular book for you from DC down the line?
Yeah, I'll leave it completely vague, other than it was based on a Grant Morrison Bible and creation. And it's just a complete thrill and honor to be given the reins to this thing. I'm having a blast on it, and I think people are going to be excited.
That's very cool. Well, you've mentioned some horror things, and I know you've got some horror projects in the works, but I want to talk about DC and Marvel for a second, because it's interesting. You are entering, I think, the mainstream world at a time where Kirkman is leaving. And actually, I'm going to be talking to Kirkman in a couple days. And it sounds like, you know, right now your focus is going to be beyond the things that are already in the works. You've got a few, you know, mainstream things. And I wonder, as you're entering the mainstream, you had an interesting take on it. And I was hoping we could talk about that again.
I was talking to Tony Moore about this. And the only way to describe our situation in comics is we're guys who grew up as kids reading superhero stuff, and then through the 90s found the underground, found Fantagraphics and Slave Labor and Vertigo. And so our tastes run to the left and the right, if we're going to call mainstream, you know, the right and the indie the left. And because we have such a love and a passion for both those things, we end up, you know, landing right in the middle. You know, like, we want to do a story about like a kitschy 1950s sci-fi guy, but we also want him to be, you know, torn up and you know, an alcoholic with the guilt of a genocide, you know, an alien genocide on his shoulders.
Absolutely.
So you're kind of delving into both things there. So to have been working solely in the land of, you know, coming up with my own things and creating my own my own books, it's incredibly flattering that the reaction to those books, in an industry that is so competitive and it's so difficult to get things seen, that Marvel and DC are both, giving me projects that are great projects. I mean,
cool.
They're trusting me with a lot of their big stuff. And it's, what better than to play in both playgrounds, you know? It couldn't be more fun. I'm in a situation where I just want to freeze time. I really do. I just want everything to stay right where it's at, because it's. I get to, one week I'm you know, on the phone with Fraction and we're cooking up what to do with Frank Castle and the Marvel Universe, and or then I'm talking to Siglian about the Atom or Booster Gold or this new project at DC, and it's the next week I'm off, you know, creating Legion of the Supernatural and cooking up, you know, how does Frankenstein deal with, you know, vampire hordes. You know, being able to do both things is a dream. It really was. I never could have imagined that both things would have fallen into place as well as they did. But yeah, I mean, other than to sit here and repeat how incredibly excited I am, I don't know.
Will you have time for both? I mean, is this going to be, or, I mean, you know, again, the benefit of a writer is, of course, you can write the scripts in advance, and I'm sure you are ahead of schedule on some of these things, in theory.
Oh, yeah.
Giving you the benefit of the doubt.
It would be tough to balance them if I was like a normal person with a life, you know? if there was things that were taking place, say, outside of my house that I was engaged in, then it would be difficult.
Okay.
The situation that I've got myself in now is, in order to, you know, really focus on my writing, about 5 years ago, I was working full-time penciling and storyboarding during the day and writing 8 hours at night. And I got pretty used to working 14, 15-hour days, 7 days a week. And it's a strange thing being a workaholic, because once you get dialed into that groove, the groove gets pretty deep. And when I go on vacation now, which I haven't done for 2.5 years, the last vacation I had, it it literally took me 4 days before I could unwind, before I could stop checking my email, which I promised my wife I wouldn't even hook up. But, of course, within 3 hours of being in the hotel room, I'm banging my head into the wall. So I'm working a lot these days, but it's such good work that you can't complain about it. And at this point, I can turn around, you know, if I'm working 12, 13-hour days, I can turn around a real solid, fleshed-out script in 4 to 5 days. So I can, you know, I can comfortably do 4 and 5 issues a month, and I am pretty far out on a lot of the stuff right now.
Cool.
And I always try and keep an issue ahead of where the artists are at, in that way, no matter what, they at least know where the story's going, which I think ultimately helps with continuity gaps.
Very cool. Well, let's talk about The Punisher, and then I want to talk about all the creative stuff that you've got, both currently in process, including an issue that came out just this past week, mm-hmm. the Frazetta Creatures one-shot. But I want to talk first about Punisher War Journal.
Yep.
Because now, how close are we to the next issue of that?
Oh, my God, I can't even begin to keep track.
Because it's been a couple weeks, I want to say, since the last one. I think 2 weeks ago was the last one, as we're taking this. Okay.
The release dates, I have almost, I don't even know when books are out.
I understand.
Sometimes. Yeah. So,
well, we're still in the Jigsaw story with Matt.
Yeah.
And Howard Chicken.
The hotness is coming. I mean, it was interesting because when Matt and I wrote this, I flew out to Kansas City and hung out with him and Tony Moore, who was also out there, and I was sort of bouncing back and forth doing some stuff on the new Fear Agent arc and the Punisher stuff with the different guys. And Matt and I got this, you know, you can either work with somebody or you can't. There's not a gray area, you know. And Matt and I immediately had, you know, you get an energy level built up when you start talking story stuff with somebody who you have, you know, a similar mindset. And what we started doing with The Punisher got us both so excited that we weren't sure if it was as good as we thought it was. And you can't be. You never can be. The reaction and everyone's reaction is different, but the point with the Punisher thing, the Jigsaw thing, was a build. And with anything, I think that if you give too much impact, too many events in every single issue of an arc, and that's what this is. You know, it's not a one issue story. It's a 6 issue story.
Mm-hmm.
Then you potentially rob yourself of the real big impact moments that take place at the climax. You know, in the third act when the resolution comes. And we're at that point now. All the pieces we've been putting in place and all the building we've done is finally coming together, and we're both so excited about it. And I think the reaction, you know, seeing Howard turn in these pages that are so beautiful, and you know, he's decided to stick around and do the Secret Invasion stuff that Matt and I are writing as well.
That's cool.
That's a testament to, like, if somebody of Howard's caliber wants to stick around and do more, then I kind of, you know, you're always, self-doubt's important. It's a good thing to constantly be. You never want to be complacent or self-satisfied, or you know. You never want to be happy with what you're doing. At the same time, you don't want to be killing yourself. But to have somebody of Howard's caliber want to do more, it was sort of a okay. I think we both exhaled and go, hey, Howard likes it.
Well, put me in the group that like it too, because and again, I come from that. I loved The Punisher in the 80s. I was so excited when Stephen Grant and the others kind of revamped him, and Chuck Dixon did excellent work on the character. And then we had too much Punisher in the 90s. And I was kind of nervous about this book, but Fraction started off really well.
Yeah.
And then you've come on as well, and now we're getting the jam session. And there is room for a second Punisher book, and I know there's is there a third one in the works? Is Ennis going to move on to do, like, a different kind of Punisher as well as the Max book and what you guys are doing?
I think three might be overkill.
I think
you're going to have, when the film comes out, Garth and Dylan are returning to do, I think, a 6-issue weekly series, which is in the Marvel Knights universe, which is a little different. But I know that that's going to make a lot of people really happy.
Oh, sure.
That stuff, you know, it's different in tone. It's sort of in between the Max and the Marvel Universe line. So it's different in tone, and it was a little more lighthearted, I think, than Garth's Max stuff. So that'll be coming out, I think, in December.
Okay.
And then you'll have the Max and this. So yeah, for a good 2-3 months, you will have three titles. But I think given the caliber of the people producing them, hopefully that you know, I don't think we're going to see Demon Punisher coming back or breakdancing robot Punisher.
Good.
Or Princess Punisher in the Pony Brigade.
No, that's cool. And honestly, I really have enjoyed the take on War Journal and seeing the Punisher in the Marvel Universe. And, my brain can work for both, so I'm sure I've got room for a third one. But I'm curious about the Secret Invasion story because, not to get too far ahead, but can you tell us anything about what's coming, or is it too tied to further events down the line of Secret Invasion?
I'm safe on this one. It's Frank Castle in the happiest day of his life, you know? I mean, it gave us goosebumps when we were talking about it on the phone. We were both like little kids, and Frax and I were writing it, because what's better than New York full of Skrulls, and here's Frank Castle, and he's driving a Ford Bronco down the street with skulls tied all over it, and he's got bazookas and machine guns. And, you know, he's listening to the Bad Brains, and he's whistling a tune, and he's just the happiest. It's cathartic.
Sure.
It's like, Frank is just as happy as he can be. He's like, hey, invasion. Great.
Yeah, here's a clear objective. Exactly.
Clear objective. Target practice. New York under siege. And he's thinking this stuff, you know. He's like, God, it's Christmas. It's my birthday. It's prom night. It's the first three Black Sabbath albums. Boom. And it dialed in immediately, like getting to write that stuff, it dialed in immediately to what I love about the Punisher. And that's his, when you put him in a situation like that, where the logical solution is, hey, let's run, hide, get away. Frank's running down the street like a kid. He's literally ear to ear grins, just singing, whistling and killing. As for what's taking place in the undercurrent, everything that's happened before I joined Matt, and including some stuff, some big, big reveals that we came up with in the Jigsaw stuff, it's all going to start coming to a head here.
Okay.
So Secret Invasion is, the backdrop is the Secret Invasion, and then the story is actually Frank dealing with everything that's taken place up to this issue.
Okay. All right, excellent. I've enjoyed G.W. Bridge as a supporting character, and I've really loved watching, and I forget the cop's name right now, the faux cop that is now being trained by Jigsaw and Lady Punisher. But
Ian, yeah.
thank you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
No, these are interesting characters. I mean, and we've seen a good parade of Marvel villains, Marvel Universe villains, too, so far in the run. Is there room for some Marvel heroes coming up during this Secret Invasion story?
Oh, man, I wish I could say.
Okay.
Yeah, there's some stuff. It's like the big reveals. There's a reveal in the next issue that comes out. I think it's part 5 of the Jigsaw story. It's the last batch of people you'd expect to show up, but it's like, it's a goosebump moment. Yeah,
excellent.
There's some big stuff coming up with that I would kill the reveals if I told you.
No problem, man. No, that's good. Save it for the story. That's good, man. I like that. Well, let's move on to some of the creator-owned stuff. Now, for example, for Zeta's Creatures, which just came out last week.
Yeah.
And, I never remembered seeing that painting before, first of all.
Yeah, that was my allure. I mean, I think there's so many famous ones that you're like, oh, and then that one, and then but it was also because it wasn't another warrior Dungeons and Dragons kind of fantasy thing, which I they've done a lot of, which have all been great. But I wanted to, in talking with Jay Photos, who's running the show down there, I definitely wanted something distinct, something that was a little more out there. And I guess that was a cover for a paperback in the early 70s.
Okay. And was it Teddy Roosevelt initially in the cover, or did you make him Teddy Roosevelt for the purposes of this story?
Yeah, it wasn't. That was not. excuse me. It was not originally Teddy Roosevelt. I mean, but that character, when I saw that image, that's the great thing about Frazetta, is those paintings. They tell you a story in a split second,
yep.
And everybody probably gets a different story told to them, but. That one to me was, holy shit, Teddy Roosevelt's in trouble. And, in talking to Jay about it, he was like, that's great. You know, we should talk about that. And I wrote up this proposal where I started reading about Teddy Roosevelt and got into the history of him and discovered that Burroughs actually had tried to join the Rough Riders and was declined. So I came up with a storyline where instead of being declined, he was brought in to the Black Riders, which was the paranormal wing of the Rough Riders. And Teddy Roosevelt was, in fact, the paranormal investigator as well as every other thing that he was.
He is like, seriously, if anyone hasn't read a biography of Teddy Roosevelt, you got to do it because he really was crazy and, like, kind of... You know, kind of definitely an adventurer with the Rough Riders, and kind of a 19th century superhero.
He kind of was, you know. And there's so much. It was interesting. There's a dichotomy, you know, in him that. Well, and it's going to be different depending on your point of view. For me, it was interesting to read somebody who I would read these speeches and his rallying against the corporate control that was coming in America and preservation of our, you know, natural resources and stuff. And you're like, yeah. Yeah, you're a Republican? Okay, yeah. Oh, I forgot. That's right. That's what it, you know, but, you know, conservative used to mean something, actually, not $500 billion of deficit. But the
exactly.
The thing there was that he also had some fairly questionable views on how to deal with the Native Americans and other things like that,
yeah.
where you would be like, oh wow, well you're kind of, I guess you are sort of a, you know, a cowboy, but he's brilliant, so it makes it very, he's a very difficult character, which I like. He's multifaceted, and
you're half adventurer, half Dr. Doom, because he also was big on like imperialism as well, and
right, yeah, that's right, and that's a fact. And so the more I would read, the more I was like, this went from just being a one shot where I was gonna, you know, just go in and draw a bunch of shooting and punching to where I was like, I got to know this guy. This guy's great. And I was remiss that I didn't know, hadn't studied much about him before that. But that's the great thing about writing is that you get assignments that force you to do a ton of research on things you might not normally.
Well, the art is fantastic on it, and I, you know, it's, you know, obviously, it's tough to, you know, match up and meet the level of the cover, but I think you guys have set an interesting style, and I think Eric is doing really interesting work on this story.
Peter Bergting.
Thank you. I was going to say, let me correct myself.
No, yeah, but you're probably thinking Eric DeWen, because Peter ended up taking over Strange Girl, which was a book Eric and I did. So
okay.
I think that the last time we talked, I think that I crossed your wires on that one. But no, the Peter Bergting and I had finished doing Strange Girl. We wrapped it up at issue 19 together, and we were looking for something to do when this came up, and he wanted to take over everything, colors, the whole thing, and it's I think it's groundbreaking. He's using, like, he'll blanket an entire panel in the Smithsonian in this turquoise and then just use a bright pink for when an alien's getting its head blown off. And he's doing things that are, you know, it's really graphic, and at the same time, it doesn't read as a two-dimensional piece of art. I there's a lot of depth to it. Peter is a scientist. I think that I'll be working with Peter for the rest of my career.
Well, and I really like his colors. I didn't realize he also colored because, man, you're right. I mean, I'm looking at some of these opening pages as well, and there's a real Matt Brady feel to a couple old photographs and everything. I mean, you know, pictures, paintings that were drawings that would look like photographs, and definitely have that feel from the colors.
Tough.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, it's brilliant. And it was his idea to open it up with that photograph, so it sort of brought you into the reality that this was a real person and a real band before we took a left turn and went into Fantasy Town.
This is very cool. And I'm sorry it's only a one-shot. It sounds like you might have more ideas if you down the road.
I'm so inspired by the Frazetta paintings. I mean, you know, Fear Agent was born while Tony Moore and I were looking at some Fear Agent or some Frazetta stuff online and talking on the phone. So much of the Frazetta stuff plays such a big influence on my love of pulp, of things that are like, why is there a dude underwater, and why is there a demon coming out of that goldfish's mouth, and why are there skulls everywhere, and, you know, what's that swirling thing back there? You know, he would the juxtaposition of these things he would merge together. You're like, I have to know more. So, I am in talks with. I think what we're going to potentially be doing an ongoing Frazetta book that I can't go into too much, but it would be Peter on art doing fully painted pages this time instead of digital colors.
Wow.
And which I've seen his painted pages. They're mind-boggling. And so, yeah, there will hopefully, once my schedule clears up, be some more Frazetta stuff.
That's great, man. This is a really fun imprint, and I don't now are they through Image or are they a studio through Image? Is that how that's all working and everything?
Because it's J Photos is basically running the show, but it's part of Image. I know that they're embedded down there, and they're all working real close together.
That's great, man. No, Death Dealer's been really fun, and just the look of all these books have been great. And yeah, I mean, it's surprising that someone hadn't thought of this sooner. And I'm glad that we're enjoying it now because they're wrapped around gorgeous covers, and they, as you say, each cover does tell its own split second story, and it's fun to see you guys use that as the inspiration and springboard into these very interesting stories that still feel like Frazetta's universe. So very cool, man.
Been a blast.
Now, I want to move on to the End League, which is through Dark Horse and is coming back in August with issue 5?
Issue 4 and 5 are going to be coming out in August, it looks like.
And Eric, and excuse me, is it Eric Canetti?
Canetti, who has just left his job as art director at Cartoon Network on Ben 10 to get back into comics. We lured him back. There's no getting out of comic books. Once it's in your blood, you've got the addiction. There's no escape. Eric is one of my just absolute favorite artists. He was introduced to me by Ivan Brandon, and I've just been following his stuff ever since. And it's one of those guys that I'm so enamored with that I never conceived that. Hey, I should ask him to do it if he wants to do a book. you get into that place where the perception of value is so high because you're such a fan of someone's work that you don't imagine that you could potentially put a project together. Well, so I'm burping.
No, that's okay. You're
mid interview burp. Hold on. That's burp. Mid interview burp.
You had a full steak dinner. That's okay, man.
I did have. I'm full of red meat. I'm full of blood. And my new Portland hippie stomach isn't used to it. It's like, what's up, hippie stomach? This ain't tofu. It's bloody. I'm like, you shut up, you, and I punched him.
Well, you're
that's why we had anyway.
No.
Well,
has the story changed?
Go ahead.
No. You finished getting Eric because I want to know if the story has changed now with Eric on it in any way.
Eric is a total jerk. I contacted Eric after it was clear that we were gonna need a new artist, and fortunately he was. He was into it. I mean, he had seen the first couple few issues, and but what mostly excited him was what I had coming up in the book and what I had planned and sort of the point of it. And he got incredibly enthusiastic. At first, I think he was a little hesitant based on having done so much superhero stuff at Wildstorm and already having done a Superman archetype in Majestic or Majesty. Mm-hmm. I forget the character's name, but. But once I got him on the phone and we talked about it, he was in. He was immediately sold. And the pages are just mind-boggling. You'll see some of Eric's first work at the end of issue 4. He did the last 8 pages in issue 4.
Okay.
And then his first full issue is issue 5. And at that point, we're going to be monthly. And, yeah, it's as good as it gets in comic books. Eric is a scientist. He is dropping the dope rhymes.
Well, based on what I read about what's coming up in the series, I thought we were done with the Superman archetype, but apparently we're going to fill in more of the details of, his story and a few other heroes' backstories, and you're going as far back as the World War II era.
Because how can you not?
Sure.
The thing is that I'm not trying to reinvent anything. I'm trying to play off of all of the classic stuff, and yeah, it's been done. But I think when people when we start hitting the points of the story where you see what's been going on, who's really behind the curtain, the reveals will be a big payoff. I made a list of all the classic trappings and all the things that I wanted to do, and one of them is Astonish Man back when he had a giant golden shield that he stole from the Greek gods in a team of rocket powered, jet-packed, airborne troopers with giant rifles and a corn cob pipe chomping sort of Sergeant Rock type barking orders at everybody. But we're going to be going back and forth quite a bit in time as we sort of set up the things that happened in the past that are going to play a big role in the future, and round out the universe and give people sort of a better idea of of what's come and what's coming.
Well, these are cool characters that you have set up, and it is interesting to see. You know, I mean, the story started with the villains have won, and as, you know, as you've said before, in explaining the End League, these are a ragtag. This is what's left as far as the heroes really trying their last gasp and, you know, get the last, you know, bit of power that they might be able to, you know,
turn the tide
against this game that's already been won by the villains. And I've enjoyed the first three issues. I didn't realize that it was only three. Like I said, that's why I was surprised. I thought it was only five coming back. But
we put a lot in those first three. I mean, they're packed full.
Sure. Thor, little interesting take on Thor, who's a little cranky.
Well, I think a lobotomized Thor running around screaming like, you know, like the Hulk. How much more fun can you have than that? You
absolutely, know? And not, you know, yeah, and so out of control that he kills a few heroes in the process. But I've this is great, man. I've really enjoyed it. I think the characters are interesting, and again, you've started this universe where I'd like to see more stories even beyond. I mean, I we're only a couple issues in. And I'm sure you'll be telling a full 12 here, but it sounds like you've got a lot of ideas for, you know, all of these heroes and the villains for that matter. And it'd be interesting to see some more stories in this universe.
I think we will. There's talks about a Prairie Ghost miniseries because what happened to him in the 60s that sets up a lot of the villain stuff plays a big part in the Day of Armageddon when all the villains get together and kill the heroes. And then beyond that, we're going to wait until the book's been monthly for a good four or five issues and get the momentum built back up, and then we're going to start announcing some other stuff that's coming up.
Excellent. That's great, man. Well, I noticed it was either on your blog or maybe you Twittered it. I'm not sure, but I remember following a link and seeing a new cover for Fear Agent.
Oh, yeah. Tony just finished the last cover for his current arc, Eye Against Eye.
Okay.
Which the second issue should be shipping in a week or two. Everything that's been happening in Fear Agent, you know, it's interesting because you can write an outline for something. And when I wrote the outline for Fear Agent back in 2003, 2004, it was a 7-page, 8-page document, maybe not even that, maybe 6 or 7. It wasn't that much. And I'm still not done with that original document, you know.
Wow.
It's so easy to write a paragraph that's then going to take you an entire, you know, two issues to get through, which is what it turns out to be when you do sort of a beat map and sort of hit the bigger moments without a lot of detail, which is what a lot of this was. So in Eye Against Eye, Tony Moore is back, and we're starting to see a lot of the build, and we're starting to see a lot of the things that have been happening in the first four trade paperbacks and the first four arcs aren't just random events. There's a bigger picture to everything. There's something else going on, and I think the mystery of what that is, it's clear. I think some people can figure it out. It's been there from the first arc, but Heath is now in a Western world. He has no idea where he's at. He's meeting up with people that he's known in other parts of his life and other times of his life. He doesn't know if he's come through a black hole, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't know if he's gone into heaven or hell or if he's in another parallel universe. You just don't know what's going on. And I think the mystery, as it unfolds, and the answers to what's going on in this arc are for the long-time reader, is going to be a real payoff. And Tony and I are just having a blast on it.
That's awesome, man. Heath Houston truly is my, I think, favorite Remender hero.
He's my favorite to write. I mean, it's the thing that I connect with the very most.
That's awesome. And Tony, you know, it was great. I finally got a chance to talk to Tony at length in New York at that con. And I know he you know, is having a blast when he's able to come back on each arc. Are you alternating? I mean, is it?
We've always alternated, yeah.
The
first one was Tony, and then the next one was Jerome Pena.
Okay.
And then Tony, and then Jerome Pena, and now Tony, and then hopefully Jerome Pena, if not Tony. You know, we'll see what's going to happen.
That's cool. You know, Pena's wonderful as well. I mean, I've enjoyed every arc, and
Pena is a scientist of craziness. I mean, he's like when he won the Russ Manning Award and beat out guys, he beat out a ton of guys, and everybody was like, "Who's this guy?" And people who've seen Jerome's sketchbook and know what he's done. At the point, he'd only done like a couple of issues of Law of Lone at Dark Horse.
Mm-hmm.
But Jerome is in the next year. There's no question about it. Jerome is going to be the guy that everybody's after. He's so good. I mean, and Tony is as well. They're both
absolutely
amazing. But it's interesting because Tony launched the book and people identify it a little bit more with him. Jerome gets overlooked sometimes. But to have the two of them sort of tag-teaming it, the quality just gets better every trade paperback.
Will you have more Tales of the Fear Agent
yep.
kind of trades? Because I know a lot of other artists have submitted a few things. I want to say Hillary Barta is a guy that I think you've got a inventory story on, don't you?
I do. Hillary Barta and Mark Nelson, who did the original Aliens stuff at Dark Horse.
Wow.
Come back, and he's illustrated it. We'll do anything Hillary wants to do. We love Hillary. You know,
he's
poor Hillary
guy.
Had to ink me on, like, 10 issues in a row. We did Man with the Screaming Brain at Dark Horse, that Bruce Campbell thing.
Oh, sure. Okay.
That I penciled, and Hillary inked me on it. And Hillary, during the course of that, had to learn me up a little bit. He broke a lot of my bad storytelling habits, which in turn has helped my writing, you know, in so much. And then we worked on together on Jerry Duggan and Brian Posehn's The Last Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And during
right.
the course of having poor Hillary have to ink me for 10 issues, he would very at first, you know, we butted heads because I didn't want to have to. I guess there was a point in when I it wasn't arrogance, it was just exhaustion, and I didn't want to have to learn. But when he finally broke me down and started showing me storytelling tips and started really helping me refine how my storytelling was being handled, I kind of look at him as the grand patriarch. He's the living embodiment of Wally Wood, but sans the heroin habit.
So, good for us, man. He'll be around
yeah,
a lot longer.
Yeah, indeed. And so anytime Hillary can do anything for Fear Agent, it is a treat for everyone because he is a huge inspiration for the book as well, you know.
He hangs out at the store where the Around Comics guys do their podcasts, and that's I'll either see him there or I'll see him at cons, and occasionally I'll see him just in Chicago, and it's like, dude, I got to have you on. So, yeah, I got to...
You really should. Hillary is great. He's
yeah.
so interesting.
Absolutely, and a great history, and has worked on a lot of great things, and I always enjoy talking with him, and it's like, oh, dude, I'm like, I got to get you on Word Balloon, man.
Yeah, so. Yeah, and I mean, I know that there's a lot of people out there that would love to learn more about Hillary because he's sort of he's a mystery wrapped in a tortilla, wrapped in a burrito or something.
Well, let's talk about a couple things coming out in October. One of them obviously dovetails into both your love of monsters and heroes, this Legion of the Supernatural.
Yeah.
Now, first of all, you got Brett Blevins doing art.
Painting it, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and which people haven't seen Brett's paintings, it's a mix between Jack Davis and Frank Frazetta. I mean, it's just amazing. He's been off. He left comics 15 years ago, and he's Bruce Timm's go-to guy on, you know, the Batman and the Justice League cartoons for
yeah.
storyboards. And so Brett's just been churning out storyboards for 15 years. And you can't do that without just becoming a motherfucker. And he was already so good. But now he's a giant, and he's stomping around Art Town, and he's throwing thunderbolts of beautiful paints at the pages of people, and they're blowing up. These people are blowing up just at the sight of his pages, these imaginary people in Art Town.
Now, you know, based on what art I've seen so far, we see some recognizable monsters that are joining together for the cause of good, but they all have their own different little shadings. It sounds like, you know, this isn't your father's Dracula, for example.
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, this Dracula is more like Tony Stark. I mean, I think that the fun thing in the case of like a Fear Agent taking a classic, iconic looking 1950s Wally Wood spaceman and telling a very modern, sort of heart wrenching story with him, in the same sense. Legion of the Supernatural is taking these very iconic, very recognizable universal monsters, as well as some archetypes of some other monsters from comic books, and mixing them together. But none of them are who you expect. And I think that the take that I've got on these guys is gonna be a good read. It's probably in the top three things for pure enjoyment that I've ever written. I just finished the second issue and got it up to Brett, and he is so enthusiastic and so excited, and the pages and the covers he's turning out are so beautiful that it's like getting to work with Frazetta. I mean, the stuff that Brett is turning around is just that beautiful. And the scripts, it was something that in the End League I wanted to round out a universe, and I wanted everything to be very clear and eventually be explained so there weren't any questions, and it was all, you know, a lot of reveals, and that demands a little exposition. Going into this, I had just finished reading Grant Morrison's All-Star Superman, and I was so inspired by Grant's ability to boil it down to its core and just tell you a great Superman story. And he doesn't bore you with origins and explanations. It's Samson. What's he doing? It doesn't matter. It's just Samson. What's he doing there? How did he get there? You don't ask yourself that. Like, after a few pages, when you recognize and you realize the intent that, you know, of what he's doing there, you can just shut your brain up. That suspension of disbelief can just go away, and you can just enjoy this great, fun comic book that taps into everything you love about the character. And I wanted to try and do that. I wanted to try and break free from the exposition and break free from the restraints of needing to define and just present the story, get it going, introduce the characters, and then let the moments within, you know, within the actual plot unfolding define who they are.
That's cool. I look forward to what you have described so far as some of the characters. Your take on Frankenstein. You know, physically, it looks like that classic Universal Frankenstein that we all know and love. But it's interesting that I see a pretty clear, direct connection to the original Shelley story, where, you know, this Frankenstein seems to be a lot more intelligent and, you know,
right,
with a purpose beyond just the usual stomping around with his arms stretched out, you know, with
right,
the clunky walking and everything. And that I look forward to kind of, you know, finding out more about this take on Frankenstein.
Yeah, the hook with the Frankenstein character is he is Dr. Frankenstein, and his origin takes place in issue 2, and we get a quick look at what happened to him during the course of a flashback as he's, well, I can't give that away, but let's just say that maybe Frankenstein becomes a vampire. Holy shit, greatest idea ever. Thank you.
Okay.
Flying around on a rocket ship, holding missiles and throwing them at people. That's the kind of great, fun stuff that this book is going to deliver. He is Dr. Frankenstein, and after a horrible accident, Igor actually botched the procedure of putting his brain into one of the bodies they had lying around.
Oh, wow.
So as we meet Frankenstein and the adventures and things move forward, we'll caption through his thoughts, which are articulate and together, but he's got it's almost the effect of being paralyzed. He can't speak very well, everything. You'll hear what he's thinking, and then it comes out as, "Me am save good," and the frustration that he deals with and his inability to communicate with the outside world, you know, in any other way than, like, you know, than just making these utteral, you know, grunting rrr sounds.
Well, and it sounds like even though the Wolfman is working with Dracula, they've kind of got a history where, you know, they're going to be strange bedfellows, it seems.
Yeah, yeah, and all the interplay is different, and their motivations are all going to, you know, I think it's, they're not necessarily a band of heroes, they're just a band of people who all want the status quo to kind of stay the way it is, you know. The bog creature, he's kind of looking forward to humanity being wiped out, maybe, you know.
Okay.
It's not a good thing for him and his, you know, his people, the earth, you know, and the plant life, and so everybody's got different sort of motives and these things, but for the most part, most of these monsters are shadow dwellers who, you know, a world overrun by interdimensional starving vampires bent on revenge against Count Dracula, that doesn't seem like a world most of these guys want to live in. So that kind of helps push them in this direction more than dun-da-da-dun.
Well, and it's a monthly ongoing. It starts on Halloween.
Yep.
from IDW.
Yep.
Very cool. And now you got something else coming up in October, and Everybody Loves Giant Robots.
Everybody.
This is from Dark Horse. It's gigantic. And now the art on that really is amazing.
Oh, my God, yeah. Eric Nguyen, we started working together on Strange Girl at
mm-hmm.
Image about going on 4 years ago now. And Eric is groundbreaking. Since then, he's gone on to do a Sandman series at Vertigo and some X-Men stuff with Jeff Parker. And I think he's doing one of the new Warren Ellis New Universe books. And I was fortunate enough to guilt him into coming back for Gigantic. Well, it wasn't guilt. It was more, I think, that the visuals, you know, the people ask how I get so many amazing artists. And I think it comes down to you have to have a clean, high concept with your book. You have to have a clear motive and direction. And you have to have distinct and captivating visuals on that pitch. The pitch has to paint visual imagery. It has to make you see what's happening as you're reading it. And because I'm an artist as well, I think I'm pretty good at that. And so when Eric read Gigantic, he got a lot of that. He's like, okay, yeah, and, you know, he's seeing this and that. And I'm like, yeah, and he's got energy coming out of his shoulders, because basically a gigantic thing is that he absorbs kinetic energy, and he can't help but grow. So if you hit him, he basically grows a half of a foot. If you slam a concrete, you know, block over his head, he grows even bigger. The more kinetic energy he absorbs, the bigger he gets, until the critical mass is too much, and these shoulder pads he has that are like exhaust, they detonate, and he'll blow up. You know, he can blow up a city, basically. which makes it, you know, he's like a walking time bomb. And also, he doesn't want to keep growing. So when he arrives on Earth, the premise of the story is that the universe is run by an entertainment conglomerate. It's been taken over by a thing called the UBC, which is, you know, it's taking some of the things that we're seeing in American culture and multiplying them to sort of the nth degree, and imagining if the universe were, you know, say progress at a million years, and all of life's purpose is to sort of dictate ratings and to be a number that helps, you know, big executives sell television shows, and they're all consumers. They're dialed into these machines that show television programs, and Earth is a reality show. Earth was created by this UBC to make good television, and you've got a galaxy full of thousands of trillions of life forms, and they all want different shows. So Earth being a reality show, we all have our own reality television shows. And Gigantic started off as a human whose show was very popular, so he was abducted and then sort of gene spliced and turned into this gladiator arena, and the, you know, gladiator arenas are a big show as well. And how he gets back to Earth and why he's here and what exactly is going on is sort of the mystery of the series.
This, again, I mean, it's just the images, you get that feeling it's a cross between Iron Man and The Running Man and Japanese monster movies and things like, you know, Ultraman and Spectre Man back in the 60s.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, this is it's another high concept from you, Rick. It's very cool, man.
It's nothing but fun. I mean, I enjoy my job.
Well, it comes out on paper. And colored, so that's even better. So very cool, man. This is a good handful of stuff that we got to look forward to, both currently and down the line. And I wanted to take the opportunity to check in and see how things were going. And I knew you had some art changes coming up, and, you know, things had fallen off schedule like N-League, but give you the opportunity to remind everyone of the great things that are on the way and that, again, are on the racks right now. Things like Frizzetta's Creatures and Punisher War Journal. And, of course, the Atom has, how far are we wrapped up? Or is there a couple
just
issues?
Wrapped. Issue 25 came out last month.
Okay.
And so I think we've got Fear Agent. The new issue
yes.
will be coming out in a couple weeks. And then, yeah, starting in October, November, just a slew of new garbage for me to cloud everyone's mind.
Excellent. Well, when we get a couple of issues of some of these new things in the bank, you'll come back and we'll talk more.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure, John. Thanks a lot.
Always happy to talk with Rick Remender. He's a recurring guest on Word Balloon because I appreciate the guy's ideas. He's always got a high concept behind his stories. They're always entertaining, and I really encourage you to check out a lot of his books, not only the ones that we discussed, but older books as well, like Strange Girl and Sea of Red, and so many other genres that he's touched. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. This is John Suntress. Word Balloon is all over the internet. You can find us, of course, at newsarama.com. We're at iTunes, our own website, of course, wordballoon.com, and our MySpace page, myspace.com/wordballoon. I'm on Twitter now as well, so if you want to follow my little bloggings, John Word Balloon is my Twitter ID. And as always, if you have any questions or comments on the show, you can reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. Thanks again for listening. More interviews coming up later this month. In the meantime, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2008.